Typically, Ahavas Hashem is seen as the superior form of Avodas Hashem, the superior form of our relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Ahava is a love built on recognizing the inner synchronicity between the will of HaKadosh Baruch Hu and human interests. We're not interested in schar, we're interested in a rich life, a life of meaning, a life of import. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu's system provides that for us. Yirat Shamayim, at its most basic level, is fear of reprisal, fear of repercussion. It obviously could surpass that level, the awe and the unknowability of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, which it may be closer to the value of Ahavas Hashem. But Parshas Ekev does stress Yiras Hashem. It stresses Yiras Shamayim in the wake of Har Sinai, in the wake of the fact that there were no visuals at Har Sinai, as stressed again and again in Parshas Veschanan, the danger of the eagle trying to apply visuals to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. The famous pasuk of Yiras Shamayim, V'yati Yisrael Ma'Hashem Elokecha Shel Mimach Ki'im LeYiras Hashem Elokecha. Now, Yira is stressed because, first of all, it's easier, it's more fundamental, it's more of a baseline, it's easier to train fear, and it's easier to train hierarchy and authority of HaKadosh Baruch Hu than the mature view of religion, which doesn't just admit Hashem's unknowability, but understands religion as synchronous with human interests and enriching the human condition. That's something that you have to grow into, that's something that you have to learn about as you process your avodas Hashem. So Yiras Shamayim is stressed for that reason, but it's also a portal. That Yiras Shamayim is a gateway to other forms and other elements of Avodas Hashem, whereas Ahavas Hashem, one can say, is a framework, not a portal. If you've practiced religion, then you realize it at a more deep level, you realize that it's beneficial, that it's ennobling, it's redemptive to human beings, you thank HaKadosh Baruch Hu for it. So Yiras Shamayim, Reishis Chachma Yiras Hashem, it's the entree point. And there's a pasuk in this week's Parsha which highlights the entree function of Yiras Shamayim, es Hashem Elokecha Tira, and also Tavod, therefore you'll have Avodas Hashem, Bo Tidbak, you'll cling to HaKadosh Baruch Hu because you'll defer to that higher authority. And it's very similar in that respect, V'ati Yisrael Ma Hashem Elokecha Shel Mimach, Ki'im Es Hashem Elokecha, Li'avda Bacha Levavcha, L'shmar Mitzvosav. So Yiras Shamayim is stressed in Ekev as a portal, not just as the first way to teach or the first way to inculcate religion. Now, Rashi is a very interesting position in this pasuk about the end of the pasuk. First part of the pasuk is Yiras Shamayim, Avodas Hashem, Asot Tavod, Uvo Tidbak, clinging to Hashem, and then swearing in Hashem's name. But before we appreciate Rashi's position, let's take a few steps back and consider a very interesting machlokas between the Rambam and the Ramban. The Rambam in the Sefer Mitzvos, Mitzvah Vav, writes that it's actually a mitzvah to take an oath, Mitzvah Zayin, to take an oath with HaKadosh Baruch Hu's name, if you're telling the truth, because you're reinforcing the association between Hashem and Emes, and Hashem is the only reality in this world. So but what could be a stronger, more demonstrative act than getting up in front of Beis Din and taking an oath with HaKadosh Baruch Hu's name, or not even in front of Beis Din, maybe initiating a personal oath of Shavuos Vitoy, that you did eat, that you didn't eat. If it's true, you're reinforcing HaKadosh Baruch Hu as the North Star, as it were, of truth. It's the ultimate gold standard of truth, and you use Hashem's name to reinforce truth. So you're reminding people of HaKadosh Baruch Hu as the basis of all reality. The Ramban disagrees strongly. There are so many dangers in taking an oath, the dangers of defiling Hashem's name by associating Chas Hashem, the oath, with Sheker, not fulfilling the oath, mentioning Hashem's name, becoming too familiar. And according to the Ramban, the Torah isn't establishing a mitzvah to swear by Hashem's name, but is establishing preconditions. If a person feels that they must and they have to, and it's based in, and so they have to check this checklist. Are you someone that has Yiras Shamayim? Are you someone that has Avodas Hashem? Are you someone that's Avot Tidbak? Check, check, check. Okay, for you, a shvuah is possible. It's not advisable, it's not ideal, but if you need to extricate yourself from a litigation, if you need to convince someone of something, you're the candidate who could take a shvuah. The Rambam has a very proactive, favorable view of Shavua. The Ramban has a very conservative, worried perspective on Shavua. And the Torah is establishing very, very stiff preconditions for something which, in theory, isn't even ideal, even if those preconditions are met. Now, behind this machlokas, just a minute or two about this machlokas, is an interesting point. It's a big question in today's, not a big question, but it's an interesting question when you recite a pasuk, when you're saying a pasuk out of context. You're not reading it in learning, you're not reading it as Kriya Satara. You're learning, you're talking, you're schmoozing. Should you recite the pasuk with Shem Hashem? Should you recite the pasuk without the actual Shem Hashem? Like I'm speaking right now, Shem Hashem, because I'm not reciting a pasuk. Should you use something which isn't Hashem's real name? on the one hand, the distance, the recognition that there's a transcendence and a gravitas, you don't want to mention Hashem's name needlessly. On the other hand, you want to feel intimacy and closeness. And by saying Hashem, you may feel closer to HaKadosh Baruch Hu by reciting the Pasuk as is, as it was meant to be recited. Interestingly enough, I have found that in Chutz Laretz, there's much, much more of an inclination, or people that live in Israel that are still living in a Chutz Laretz cultured environment, much more of an inclination not to say the Shem Hashem, the actual shame. In Eretz Yisrael, I think there's more of a comfort level with reciting Shem Hashem as part of a Pasuk. It's more of a collectivism, more of a confidence in a relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. In Chutz Laretz, it's more of a distance, more of Hastara, more of a sense of darkness and distance. In Chutz Laretz, it's more of Rav Soloveitchik's influence. In Eretz Yisrael, much more of Rav Kook's influence. That's just an interesting machlokas, which I think represents something larger than whether you should take a Shvuah. All that being said, Rashi has a third shita. If you read Rashi carefully, Rashi says, "As Hashem elokecha tira v'tavod lo v'tidbak bo, v'li'achar sheyiu bo kol midos halalu, az b'shmo tishaveh." So it's very different from the Rambam. The Rambam feels that it's a mitzvah to swear with Hashem's name as long as you're associating Hashem with the truth. It's much closer to the Ramban, but it seems as if according to the Ramban, there's a general disinterest in Shavuos, but if you must, here are the preconditions. According to Rashi, that discrimination, that prejudice doesn't exist. It's more of a roadmap. Taking a oath with Hashem's name is a very high form of a relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. It's a very advanced form of religious experience. But don't skip steps. Go through the process. Go through the reps. First work on your Yiras Shamayim. Reishis Chachma Yiras Hashem. Then work on your Avodas Hashem in general, not just Yiras Shamayim. Then work on clinging to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Then, at the appropriate time, the appropriate slot, when it suits your overall body of work, your overall body of work religiously, then jump to the next level and take an oath. In the Ramban's view, there is a standalone mitzvah. Even if in theory, your lifestyle didn't match that highest level, any statement that's true, when associated with HaKadosh Baruch Hu's name, is a Kiddush Hashem. So as long as someone isn't a hypocrite, obviously someone who's a Rasha, who has no religious involvement, isn't involved in religious activity, gets up and takes an oath, that would feel a little bit off. But your average commoner, who is committed to religion but hasn't yet perfected all these preconditions, who has a true statement, who announces the true statement by affixing it to HaKadosh Baruch Hu's name, in theory that would be favorable behavior. The Ramban, of course, would disagree strongly because you haven't met the criteria and therefore you're not a candidate for this mitzvah. According to Rashi, you're a candidate for this experience, but you're skipping steps. First, go through your reps. First, step one, then step two, then this becomes then a very important statement about religion in a religious improvement in a gradual framework or a gradual manner rather than 0 to 60. A lot of popularity today. You hear the Gadol who had the following Chumrah and this Chumrah and that Hidur and this standard and this Kashrus. There's an old Hasidisha saying by Rabbi Nachum Mendel of Vitebsk, when you start to daven out of your league, you start to face machshav al zaros. Because if you're davening within your reality, whom you are, so whatever machshavos you have are yours and they're not zaros. They're real and you want to share them with Hashem. Once you start to posture and preen of something you're not, I think the same could be said, obviously outside of the world of tefillah, with general religious hidurim. It's important because hidurim can jumpstart overall organic religious growth, and if it's a jump start, if it's a trigger point, then it's very healthy and very worthwhile. But sometimes people adopt chumras that just don't fit whom they are. Just because that gadol took that chumra doesn't mean it fits you. You're at a different stage. Moshe Rabbeinu was separated from his wife because he had to be constantly ready for the Dvar Hashem. Would it be appropriate for me to walk away from my wife and my family life? Of course not. So religion has to be gradual, organic, developmental, appropriate. Based on the end of Parshas Yisro, you shouldn't run up the Mizbech. People, when they run to the Mizbech, they tend to take quick leaps and quick bounds and quick jumps. And Hashem says, do it in stages. It's a ramp. You can't run that fast up a ramp. What's appropriate for you at this age of your life? What's appropriate in this stage? What's appropriate? Especially with the world of Chorm, you always have to calibrate and measure when it is appropriate, when it isn't appropriate. I think Corona has a lot of influence on people. Obviously, you should never change halacha, but I know that this year, I just didn't feel comfortable creating the same somber, sad Tisha B'Av. Believe me, I didn't watch TV, I didn't see movies, I didn't have to throw a party. But generally, Tisha B'Av, I like to immerse myself in the entire 24 hours of Avelos, not talk to anyone, not answer the phone, not look at my phone, just really key. Yeshev Badad V'Yidom, Yitain Le'afar Piyu, putting dirt in your mouth and just not talking to anyone. But just, I have a family and we've been locked down more or less together. For all of a sudden, I'm just going to take 24 hours off and go into my corner. It just didn't feel like that was a chumrah that was right this year. Because I want to be misabel in Yerushalayim. What's the cost? And obviously, I was misabel in Yerushalayim as much as I felt comfortable. I didn't walk away from the entire experience. So Rashi is reminding us, don't slipstream great religious experiences into your life until it hits you, until it fits, until it's right with your overall life experience. Sometimes chumras have these mystical allures that we can all of a sudden transform ourselves. And it's off. It's inconsistent or discrepant with our overall lives. I'm a member of Amitah. I've said this story so often. I'm sure people listening to this show may have heard it before, but a boy once got into a tramp with Rav Amitah and asked him, should I wear wool tzitzis or regular cotton tzitzis? Because even though we paskin that you can wear cotton tzitzis, the Shulchan Aruch says that Yirei Shemayim should wear wool tzitzis. So Rav Amitah told him, you're probably reading this Gemara, this Shulchan Aruch, differently from my reading. You're reading it. If you want to become Yirei Shemayim, put on wool tzitzis. I'm reading it. If you are Yirei Shemayim, based on your Ben Adam L'Chaver, based on your Talmud Torah, based on your Shemir Tzah Mitzvos, then the next stage is to put on a wool tzitzis. And I thought about this a lot when I made the shift to Tcheles about 12 years ago. It wasn't a sudden decision. I want to be firmer. It just fit with who I am and where I was in life. So I put on Tcheles. Okay, so that's an interesting Rashi about chumras and gradual, organic, healthy religious growth rather than growth in spurts and wild changes and erratic changes. Kodesh Baruch Hu warns us, V'haftam es ha-ger, ki ger ha-yisa, ki ger me-yisa b'eretz Mitzrayim. Should be kind towards converts. Something which, by the way, is not easy in our world, because, well, it's easy to be kind to converts. But if you stretch that policy, not just to be kind to people post-conversion, but to try to be embracing to people as they're engaging in the process of ger, which is personally not the mitzvah, but it seems to be the spirit of the mitzvah, Well, fortunately, Baruch Hashem, we live in the modern state of Israel, or in a world in which Jews, Baruch Hashem, are no longer forlorn, no longer destitute, no longer seen as the dregs of the earth, no longer seen as the children of Satan. So people want to become Jewish for less than fully sincere reasons. 300 years ago, it was quite likely that if a person wanted to become Jewish, they're pretty serious about it. You wouldn't want to convert to Judaism unless you felt a theological calling. But today, many people want to be citizens of the state of Israel, who had parents, fathers who were Jews, my mothers who were not Jewish, but in their mind, being a citizen of the state of Israel is not keeping Tariag Mitzvahs as many of the other citizens in the state of Israel who have Jewish citizenship are behaving. So it's a tricky situation today. I don't believe we have an answer in our generation. Not every problem has a solution. I think we've realized that over the last couple of months. But it's interesting how Rashi fills in the motives. I would have read the pasuk, and of course we do read the pasuk. V'haftam es ha-ger, ki gerim ha-yisa b'eretz Mitzrayim. Namely, we went through that experience. We experienced that vulnerability. We were fragile. We were persecuted. We were the outsiders. The Jew is a consummate outsider. So it's a consummate outsider to be even more sensitive to the needs of the outsiders. And for that reason, HaKadosh Baruch Hu programmed this experience of vulnerability and inferiority at the seminal moments of our national identity. So we should have built into the Jewish DNA sensitivity to those who suffer. And that's a Jewish calling. And whenever people suffer, whenever there's a need for social crusade, Jews have to be part of that, again, proportionate to all other needs that Jews have to be involved in. But Rashi has a very different translation of why you should love the ger, why you should embrace the ger. Mum shebecha al tomer lechavrecha. Because you were once a ger, so don't condemn or don't critique people with your own faults. I want to discuss two things here. First of all, why doesn't Rashi say love a ger? Because you should have the capacity to love because you identify with his plight, you identify with his suffering. So part of it is it's the same issue with V'ahavta l'reacha kamocha. Love is very strange. Love is an emotion. Love is an ideal. But sometimes love and disrespectful behavior walk hand in hand. Think of the people that love you in life and think of the people that you love. And sometimes there's a lot of hurt. There's a lot of pain caused because love is such a raw and deep emotion. So this is an attempt by, when the Rambam writes V'yavta l'recha kamocha, he codifies it not as love, his own mitzvah to love another Jew emotionally, but to treat another Jew with respect and to attend to their needs and to just treat them with dignity. I think there's something similar in Rashi. It's not easy to legislate love to other people, and it's certainly not easy to legislate actual emotional love and identification, because you identify with their plot, people move on, people become much more ingrained. So even though we were once gerim, we don't see ourselves as gerim. So all of a sudden a ger arrives and you're supposed to identify. It's more to realize that Jews were and always will be outsiders. And as outsiders, there's a tendency in life to project your own flaws and struggles onto other people, not just the feelings of being an outsider, but anytime we struggle with issues in our hearts and flaws in our character, we project. It's one of our coping mechanisms. And as outsiders, sometimes, and I don't think this is particularly true of Jews, but I think it's true of humanity in general, as outsiders, sometimes what we take from others, we give to people beneath us on the food chain. So that's why minorities tend to discriminate and to be racist against other minorities, because minorities tend to be on the business end, on the front end of discrimination, and then they'll use inappropriate words towards others, or sometimes even towards themselves. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu is, on the one hand, according to Rashi, at least in Akev, not instructing us to love the ger because of this deep identification, we're going to fall in love with his plight, with his trajectory, but A, to realize that Jews are always outsiders, ger yisa beretz lachriya, beretz lo lahem, and because of that, we have a responsibility, but even if we don't feel the responsibility, we should certainly not be insensitive and project and transfer all of the persecution and all of the discrimination that Jews are typically facing and transfer it to people who are less empowered and less entrenched than we are. And certainly not to project our own flaws and our own insecurities on other people. So it's a very, very grounding Rashi. We don't love the ger. We should love the ger because we're identified with his heroism and his courage. He's a Rus. He's a ger tzedek. But even if we can't, there's a sense of we have responsibilities to people of vulnerability. And it's not Ava, but it's responsibility. And we were in that position. And to a degree, we're always in that position because we're always not Garen, but we're always on the outside. And instead of discriminating against, and that's why sometimes Jews who are racist, it's even more painful, because not even if you don't love a minority, Jews should know better. And to just exhibit racism and disregard for people of need is, I think, a defrauding or bankruptcy of Jewish identity. Okay, the final interesting Rashi is a Rashi about imitating Hashem. Now, what does it mean to imitate Hashem? Hashem isn't physical, Hashem isn't knowable, Hashem isn't visual, so we imitate his traits. Ma'u rachum, ma'afata rachum, ma'u chanun, afata chanun. He's merciful, he's compassionate, so we want to try to be similar to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. But there's a Rashi in Parshas Ekev about imitating a combination of traits of Hashem. And it's a harder challenge because these two traits seem to be mutually exclusive. They seem to be contradictory. Of course, for HaKadosh Baruch Hu, nothing is contradictory. For HaKadosh Baruch Hu, nothing is mutually exclusive. But how do we act that way? It's one thing for HaKadosh Baruch Hu to be both good and the source of Tov and Ra, and for the source of Yom and Laila, and for the source, because HaKadosh Baruch Hu is different from us. He's Osa Shalom Avari Sakol, Yotzor Avari Hoshek, but how are we? So this is one of the great challenges. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is both powerful and mighty and awesome and all omnipotent, and he's also humble. He's also hidden. And Chazal capture this strange combination, because generally people of authority, people of strong will, people of capacity, they exert their personality, they exert their talent, their authority, their presence. It's hard for them to be humble, hard for them to be retiring and hidden. Chazal's description of this, B'chol makom shata motze givurosa shel HaKadosh Baruch Hu, sham ata motze in v'sunaso. Wherever you see a portrayal of HaKadosh Baruch Hu's strength and glory and awesomeness, you very quickly see psukim that attest to his humility. And this week's parsha is one example. In this week's parsha, there's a juxtaposition of two psukim. On the one hand, You should listen to HaKadosh Baruch Hu's rebuke. U'maltem es'ar la'savavchem v'arpachem l'takshuot. Pasak tazayin. Ki Hashem Elokechem v'Elokei Elokim. Adonai Adonim. Akel. Agadol. Agibar v'anarab. By the way, this is the source for the threesome featuring in Shemot Esrei, because Moshe Rabbeinu coined these three, Gadol, Gibor, Nara. So we're allowed to say these three. We're not allowed to make up our own praise of Hashem. He's that awesome. He's that beyond human description. In the next pasuk, he's not just Gadol, Gibor, Nara, Hakel, Elokim, Adonai Adonim, but he's Osem Mishpat Yasam V'Yamana, cares to the weak, cares to the orphan, cares to the widowed, Ohev Ger, loves Gerim, Lechem Nesimla, feeds them, clothes them. So how do you have HaKadosh Baruch Hu being on the one hand Gibor, on the other hand Anav? Well, in HaKadosh Baruch Hu it makes sense, because Hashem is different from humanity, and Hashem is able to transcend the limitations. Transcend, he's limited by the character traits that in the human field are so mutually exclusive. But how does a human being become both a Gibor and an Anav? Think for yourself. As I'm describing this, there are people of great accomplishments and achievements, and they exert their personality, and then there are people who are very modest and humble. And how do you achieve both at a human level? So I don't have the easy answer. I was thinking about it a little bit today. I didn't have much time to think. Two things I know. One is I saw this. I saw this in my Rebbe Rav Lichtenstein. He'd be the quietest, kindest, shyest, humblest person. And then when he'd start talking in shir or giving a sikha, it would be thunderous. It'd be fulminating. You feel such powerful sense of character and personality. I don't know how to break it down. I don't know how to give a recipe for it. What's the secret for the two? I just know in my heart that it exists. I know in my heart it exists because Rashi wants us to be like a Kodesh Baruch Hu. A Kodesh Baruch Hu has these two traits. I believe it's probably the closer you are to a Kodesh Baruch Hu, the more of that gevurah you sense, but it isn't about you because you feel the presence of Hashem, so you have that luxury and liberty of expressing your gevurah because you don't fear that it's your own sense and therefore it's an anivus that doesn't have to negate the force of personality. I don't really know what it is. I know that I've seen it in Rav Lichtenstein and in some others, and therefore I trust that it can be pulled off. But again, it's a very unique moment because it doesn't describe this mid of HaKadosh Baruch Hu or that mid of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, but a distillation of two midos that to the casual observer would seem at the human level to be mutually exclusive. If HaKadosh Baruch Hu synthesizes them, then we perhaps are mandated to find that blend that exists so naturally in the Rabbanu Shel Olam.